Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. It's 4:30 p.m. Eastern on the 26th of April, 2020. I'm going to try once again to get a hold of my guest for this evening. Should be an interesting show. Assuming we can get a hold of her.
Hey.
Stoey, how are you?
I called you back a few times, but apparently it doesn't go both ways.
No, it doesn't go both ways.
Just phone number. Man, you are the hardest person to get a hold of I know in the modern world.
Is that right?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Totally.
Is it because
true.
I don't? Because I don't do the cell phone thing very much. That's probably
part of it. Yeah.
Okay.
So you don't do the cell phone thing, and then when I try to return your call, all that comes up is a busy signal, and I'm going, "What is that all about?"
You got a busy signal?
Yeah.
That makes no sense. I'll have to double check.
That's what I thought too. Makes no sense.
Anyway,
but you know, I thought, well, he'll call back.
Some of the people that listen to this program probably know that I play guitar at some local venues here close to my home. And I have on the show today a fellow that plays wood flute with me at several venues. We'll just call him Stoey. And we play at Urban Comforts probably the most. And I thought it might be interesting to have him on the show and get a little local perspective on the strange and bizarre world we are living in. So we talked about this a little bit briefly on the phone today about this whole weird coronavirus things, but let's not go there at the beginning.
Sure.
I want to talk a little bit about the Native American flute, if that's okay. Because I don't
sure.
know.
Sure, people are dying to know about the Native American flute, Mark, and so I am very excited to talk about it.
I actually have a little clip here that might be fun just to listen to a little bit of, and I'll have to give some credit. I think it came from a place called Audio Jungle. I couldn't
Audio
tell
Jungle.
Exactly who the artist was. I think it was something called Art of Sound. I don't know. I'm just guessing on that. And you'll hear a little voice in the background that says, Audio Jungle, Audio Jungle. So just to warn you, but it's very beautiful. It reminds me of some of your playing, Stoey. So
okay,
play
let's hear it.
Quickly.
Audio Jungle.
Anyway, that little riff, it even reminds me of some things I've heard you play.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally true. And I love the background music that the guy is playing with, or gal. And so that's very typical of some of the background music I use when I'm playing. Yeah, I love those sounds. They're very meditative and relaxing.
Isn't the Native American flute used in music therapy?
So to answer your question, yes. Also, if you go to massage parlors or yoga studios or places that are supposed to be meditative and relaxing, you'll often hear music played that has Native American flute in it. There's something about the hollow sounds of the Native American flute. They're just haunting and reflective. And I'll tell you, you know, Mark, I sometimes play for yoga classes here locally, and I'll play for an hour while people are doing yoga. And I will tell you, at the end of that time, I'm like a rubber band, you know, coming out of there because it's so relaxing. And the feedback I get, you know, is really positive with regard to helping it create that meditative and relaxing mood in those yoga sessions. So, so Native American flute, relaxing, meditative. And I hate to say this because you really don't necessarily want this with an audience, but it can put you to sleep.
You know, the Native American flute is, it's kind of neutral. It reminds me of being in a forest. And I just feel the sense of peace and health so much.
Yeah, so if you're interested, I can tell you the Native American story behind the Native American flute.
Sure.
Of course, you know, it's like French fries. They're just fried potatoes in France, right? So the Native American flute is not called the Native American flute among Native Americans. It's actually called the love flute, right?
Really? Oh.
Yeah, so here's the story. And so Native Americans illustrate everything with the story. So the story is about a young man who had fallen in love with a particular maiden in his tribe. And but, you know, he was a bit awkward and backward and was unable to get her attention. And she seemed it seemed that all the other young men in the tribe were more interesting to her than he was. So eventually he decided to go on a spirit quest, right, where they go out into the forest and the hills and are alone and meditate. And so he did this. And he climbed up onto a mountain, and on this mountain, as he sat and the breeze was blowing, he started to hear the sounds of music wafting through the air. So he's looking for the source of the music, and he finds that there's a tree nearby that has had insects in it, and the woodpeckers have come and poked little holes in the branch, and as the wind blew over the branch, the beautiful music was created. So he took the branch and learned how to play beautiful music on this, took it back to his village, and the way all good love stories end, with his beautiful music, he's able to attract the attention of the lovely young maiden who found him more desirable than all the other guys. And so eventually they were married. Now, in some Native American circles, so a young man, when he starts courting, will carve for himself a Native American flute and learn to play. And then he plays the flute up until the day he is married. And as a part of the wedding ceremony, the flute is thrown into the fire, never to be played again. And so because the power, the alluring power of the Native American flute to attract females is so powerful that if he were to continue playing, you know, that might not be very great for the first wife to experience.
Well, there's a lot of jokes. There's a lot of jokes I could throw in here. Yeah, I noticed you haven't thrown away any of your flutes. There.
I haven't, and I will tell you from experience that story may not be completely true.
Oh, well, there's an exaggeration there.
Yeah, it's just as likely to put the ladies in the audience to sleep as anything else. But that's the oral tradition behind the Native American flute, the love flute among Native American circles.
That's a great story, and it's also very visual. I could see a lot of different images while you were describing it.
Yeah.
Do you know which tribes actually did play a wooden flute?
So I think many of the tribes have this tradition.
Okay.
But in the Southwest, particularly, you see they have the flute god, right? Kokopele, who kind of governs the lore of the flute. Now, I don't know a lot about Kokopele, but the reason I bring him up is because his image is very famous. You always see him with a flute in his mouth, and that's how you know it's Kokopele, right? And so even deities play the Native American flute, so I'm in good company.
Kokopele is a fertility deity, usually depicted as a humpback flute player. Often the feathers of antenna-like protrusions are on his head, who is venerated by some of the Native American cultures in the Southwest United States.
Yeah, so there it is.
It's related to this whole fertility and childbirth and all that.
Absolutely. So there it is, the love flute, just as I said.
I did not realize that. That's so interesting,
right,
that there's this kind of whole history behind it. And I do think, you know, when we play music, that we provide a kind of therapy, although we get a little wild sometimes, but even that's a kind of therapy, I think, sometimes.
So I love what we do, which is kind of a mix between your classical guitar and jazz and meditative music, and we kind of have our own sound.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good. I like it.
We've even got some rock or pop in there, which is kind of nice too.
Absolutely. And our audiences of 10s and 15s have been thrilled.
Come on now. Don't give us, you know.
Oh, there was that one time when we had close to 100.
Yeah, right. I think so, right. Okay, you know, and I think a lot of people are having troubles today managing anxiety, fear, and other kind of negative thoughts.
True.
So music is kind of a good way to deal with life's pressures. Do you meditate at all?
So I do. I call it by a different name, prayer. And, you know, pretty regularly, daily, you know, I pray, and so, you know, I believe in the deity and try to act like I believe in the deity. And so, yes, I would say yes is the answer to that question.
Mm. Coco Pele. That's a new god for me. Fertility deity.
There it is.
Very, very interesting. Now, didn't you go to Spain earlier this year before the coronavirus got more widespread?
I did. In fact, I was in Spain when the coronavirus outbreak started there. And I was a little concerned that I might not be able to come back to the United States. Now, this was in early March when I was over there.
Yeah, we were
and
still
so,
playing, though.
Yeah. No, no. This was in February. This was in February when I was over there. And I will tell you that whenever I saw people on the streets from China, and most of them were wearing masks, I would walk on the other side of the street. So I was a little concerned when we got back from Spain. I was in Morocco as well. What are the chances I contracted the virus over there, and should I self-quarantine for a couple of weeks? Just because of my change in employment, it kind of ended up being a self-quarantine for a couple of weeks, and people who were traveling with me were also asked by their companies to quarantine. None of us contracted the virus to our knowledge, but we were in Europe when the outbreak started.
But, you know, that's the funny thing about this virus. You don't know if you've got it or not unless you get a specific test. And I'm not even so confident about some of these tests, but we can talk about that later. But I thought maybe I had it back in January. I just didn't know what it was. And I,
you know, there are a lot of reports.
There
are a lot of reports out there of people who seem to have experienced the virus earlier than, you know, the likely spread here in the U.S. And that is, there is some potentially truth in that based on the testing that they have been doing recently and the numbers of people they have found that have the coronavirus antibodies. In other words, they've had it, they're over it, they maybe didn't even know they had it, and now they have the antibodies. And, you know, as high as 15% of some populations have tested positive for the antibodies. And so evidence that perhaps it was around earlier than we thought it was.
And isn't the coronavirus like actually a family of viruses?
It is. That's right. SARS, which created such stir some years ago, was also a coronavirus as well.
And were you in Spain to listen to flamenco guitar music, or were you in Spain for another reason?
No, it was strictly pleasure, right? I've never been to Spain or Morocco, and I had kind of a bucket list. My real bucket list was Morocco, but I thought if I'm going to go to Morocco, Spain is just a hop, skip, and a jump across the Mediterranean there. And so we spent 4 days, 5 days in Spain. Actually, we made a trip into France during that time as well. And then we spent 4 days in Morocco. And, you know, it was really magical. We had a wonderful time.
I think the greatest guitarists in the world are from Spain.
You know, I love this classical style which you play, which reminds me a lot of, and sometimes when you get a riff going where it's very, sounds very Spanish in its influence, and I really like it when you do that.
I've been working, there's two styles that I play, and one of them is the solier, and I've been working on some stuff for that. So maybe next time we get together, we can do a little of that. And I told you earlier about some of the other stuff that I'm working on. There's a lot of material there. It takes a lot of discipline to keep practicing all the time. Because if you don't, at least it gets rough, you know. It doesn't
You're right.
play.
It
doesn't so, So anyway, let me switch gears a little bit. I'm going to, we kind of naturally went this way, but I want to bring up another clip I have.
Okay.
This, I don't know if you got a chance to did you get the email I sent you about
I did.
Did you get
Botar,
a chance to listen to any of that? Botar, did you listen to any of that?
I listened to what I thought was the whole thing, it went to another clip, but I wasn't sure if that's because I clicked on something wrong or he was just finished talking.
Let me play a little bit of this.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then we're going to get into the fringe world, I guess, people like me that are very open to looking at things a different way. Let me play this, we'll talk about it in a minute.
Okay. The moratorium that was placed, and then $3.7 million from the National Institute of Health was transferred to China so they could continue this research, even though the moratorium. So they basically outsourced this research to China. Is this the same topic we're talking about here? This news is just breaking?
Yes, this is exactly right. So it goes back to 2014. The U.S. government decided, based upon certain virologists at that time, saying that, look, there's no justification for this kind of research. There's a potential for it to cause harm, cause a pandemic, so there's no justification for us to do this type of research. So the government passed a moratorium in 2014. Fauci approved budgets to be sectioned for this type of research. So basically, and I'm getting really, every time I think about this, it gets me really flustered because I'm so angry that he basically broke the law. He more than broke the law. He created this entire cascade that we're seeing with the world shutdown was created by this initial aspect back in 2015. He broke the law. He went against government moratoriums. He took taxpayer money and he funded research that has now led to the COVID-19. In 2017, he was documented at Georgetown University saying that there will be a pandemic that this presidency will face, that this term will face. How did he know that in 2017 that something was going to happen in 2018, 19, or 2020? There's no, you can't predict the market from 3 days from today, what's going to happen. How did he know that there was going to be a pandemic? He stated the president of this president will face a pandemic. The exact quote, I don't want to say the exact words. You guys have the video footage. My point is that when somebody starts making these type of statements, and then they were involved with the breaking of the law to fund the research that American taxpayers paid for, that then goes to Wuhan and now trying to create this diversion and say that it was China. God, I don't know whether it came from China or released in China, whether it was already released here. It's irrelevant. The complicity of what's going on right now, whether China, whether it was released in China or whether it was already here or however it happened, the U.S. system has condoned it, has jumped on it. They're opportunistic. They're shutting down the economy when they know, in fact, that there's no basis. I mean, there's no virus that leaps 6 feet or 12 feet. Now they're saying 13 feet. Complete misinformation.
Okay. Let me stop there. I'm going to try to reel some of this back just to try to.
Okay.
He's saying so much there that it's even hard to follow. And you know what I might do? I'm going to check my own personal notes too, because I don't know. Go ahead.
Maybe I should comment on whatever qualifications I have to comment on what the doctor just said.
This is pure opinion. It's your opinion one way or
so
another.
So first
right?
of all, I am a regular citizen, right? I don't have a medical degree or anything like that, but I do pay attention to what's going on in the world. And I learned that I had to do that years ago when I was drafted into the first Gulf War. And, I learned on television, you know, that I had 24 hours to prepare to get ready because my uniform.
Whoa. That's huge. You were drafted for the first Gulf War?
Yeah, well, I spoke Arabic language, and so I did that.
Oh.
But for the last 20-plus years, I've been in the healthcare environment. I've been vice president of a regional healthcare company in Zanesville, Ohio. And so I do have some knowledge about how the federal government, you know, works and
kind
of the ins and outs, and especially with regard to senior citizens and the dangers that they experience every year with the flu, but also especially this year with the COVID-19.
Wow, you're blowing my mind. There's so much information here. Hold on to that concept because I want to come back to it. Just want to, in my mind, picture what happened here. So you were not expecting to get drafted, and you found out, you said, in 24 hours that you were going to be in the Gulf War?
Yeah, so I was a member of the National Guard at that time.
Okay.
I had been trained in Arabic language. Our unit had a drill that weekend on a Saturday and Sunday. I missed the Saturday. And when I came in on Sunday, everybody told me they had signed up to go over to the Middle East. And I said, what are you guys, idiots? You know, if they need you, they will contact you and you will go. You signed your name on the dotted line. And everybody then unsigned up, which may have been a bad move on my part, because the next day they drafted us all to go over. So they said, no, you are going. And so I got to join everybody else who had volunteered earlier.
So that had to be quite a shock. Your total life, boom, changed.
It was, but you know, it's just a reminder how your whole life can change in 15 minutes a lot of times, you know. And are just unexpected things that happen in life, and then boom, life takes a different route. And you know, it's times like this that you kind of reflect and think what is really important. And this was one of those times for me, you know, where you reflect on what is really important in life and how you're living life, etc.
So they flew you over. And did you, like, it was a one-shot flight across the Atlantic, and then you two went to Europe and then down to the Middle East? Or?
So I first flew to Fort Collins in Colorado, and I received all of my equipment there. And then we flew to, there's an Air Force base in North to South Carolina. Not Air Force, it's an Army base there. And we got on the planes and flew to, we had a layover in Egypt and then on to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And I was there for the next 9 months in Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and Kuwait, translating for our armed services over there and acting as a liaison between Saudis and Arab-speaking peoples in general. And, you know, we were part of a coalition that included other Arab-speaking nations as well.
So you flew from North Carolina to Egypt?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how do you remember how long that flight was? Like 12 hours?
Well, it was probably, you know, 8 to 10 hours, because that's how long it takes to get over there. But I will tell you, there's something about flying on these large military transport planes that I was not aware. So we left in August, right? It was very hot on the tarmac in whatever state we were in. And by the time, of course, I'm hauling two duffel bags and a rucksack. And by the time I got into the airplane, it was like I had jumped into the swimming pool. So I'm completely soaked. And then the plane takes off, and you go up to, you know, 30,000 feet, and there's no air conditioning in these things. No, the inside got very cold, and it had to be at least 45 degrees. And so I'm soaking wet, and it's suddenly 45 degrees, and I shivered and shook for the next hour until my clothes dried out from my body heat. And it seemed like a really long trip, Mark.
You could have died. You could have caught your death from that.
You know? Apparently, people don't die very often from that.
But that had to be horribly, that had to be just ghastly. Were you in like a C-130 or something like that?
That's it. It was a C-130. And, you know, where there are tanks and vehicles down the middle of the plane, and you're sitting on the edges. And,
oh, great. Did they have the big M1A1 Abrams tanks in there?
So, I honestly don't remember. It's been close to 30 years now.
My goodness. That had to be such an adventure.
It was, you know, and a lot of life is about attitude. And I tried to have the attitude that this was a really exciting opportunity for me to speak Arabic in a, you know, I wanted to learn Arabic. That's why I studied it. And so this was a great opportunity for me to speak Arabic in a real Arabic speaking environment. And it was, and, you know, as much as you can have a positive experience in wartime. And I will say that if you had to be in a war in the last 500 years, that was the war to be on the side of the, you know, the coalition against Iraq. So it was as much as you can have a decent time, you know, in wartime, I think it was positive.
Stoey, let's do this. We've only got 2 minutes left. Let's plan. Yeah, I know. Time went quick. Let's plan on extending this to at least one other show, maybe next week or sometime we can get together, because I don't want to just gloss over all this fascinating stuff. So we got about
fascinating to who, Mark?
To me. I mean, you're flying off in a C-130. You're going to the Middle East, and we got about a minute and 45 seconds left. So just briefly tell us how you got that good at Arabic.
Well, first of all, I was interested in Arabic, and I had studied German language and French language and was pretty fluent in German and fairly fluent in French, and still am to this day. But Arabic was one of the languages I wanted to learn. I wanted to study and work in the Middle East. And so the cheapest way to learn Arabic was to join the military, and they pay you to go study, which not most people do. And so I did end up joining the military. I studied at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California for 18 months. And I graduated at the top of all of the language classes there and received the Joint Service Achievement Medal. It's a joint school with the Navy and the Air Force and the Marines, all the services. And so this was a really high honor that I received to graduating at the top of all the classes there.
Thanks so much, Stoey. It's been a real pleasure. Let's hook back up and try to continue this adventure next week.
Yeah, so I'd love that.
I'll see you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Bart.